So tell me a little bit about yourself. How old are you? Where are you from? What are you doing? And then I need to know how old you were when you came home from China. What province?
I am 18. I go to Southwestern University. I'm a visual arts major there. And then in my free time, I rock climb. I do Krav Maga, which is a type of Israeli martial art. And then I draw and just do stuff like that. I was 18 months old when I was adopted, or when I came to America. I'm from Yulin, which is kind of in central, I believe it's Shaanxi, but I'm not sure.
Okay, and were you in an SWI or were you in foster care? Do you know much about China?
That's actually, I talked about this on the FCC thing, actually. What we learned later, I didn't learn this until I went back to my orphanage, because we had thought I was in the orphanage the entire time, and it turns out I wasn't. I was in foster care from the start. And my foster mother was a grandmother, and she took care of the five girls that were adopted with me. So I was in foster care the entire time, and that's why they hypothesized why we were also fat, because we were getting food, lots of food. But we grew up in like this family setting with this woman's family. And when we went back to China in the orphanage, it was funny because we were getting driven to the orphanage and our car driver recognized me from like my eyebrows. Out of all things, it was the funniest thing ever. And he was like, I think, you know, like, I recognize you. I think my grandmother used to foster these kids. And we went over to her house and she had like all these pictures of me that my mom had never seen. And like all this stuff. And we learned about how I was, you know, how I acted as a kid and like things like that. And it was fascinating.
How old were you when you went back to China?
I was probably, it was in 2012, I think. So I would have been, I'm so bad at math.
15?
I'm not even looking. Good Asian stereotype. I'm like.
That's okay. We need fewer Asian stereotypes around here. We need Asian jewelry maker, visual artist people. So you were probably about 15, if you're 18 now. And you were telling me before that you did the Sister City Exchange, the Shenshibana Exchange.
I did the Shishibana Cultural Exchange with the Families with Children from China, Austin Branch. And I went over there with, I was one of five. And we were all from like different age groups. And we all went over there and talked with the schools. I think we met with, five schools. It was like one school every day. And just talked with them about the differences of like the education and what we learned and what we, you know, things like that. But it was really cool, for lack of a better word.
And then you and your mom went on a heritage tour after that exchange trip while you were still in China. You kind of tacked on a heritage tour. Tell me a little bit about that and then a little bit more about meeting your foster mom.
As far as the heritage tour goes, it was really interesting, I think, to see, because you're there to like observe the Chinese culture, right? But you're with people who are in the same kind of situation as you. So you're seeing it not only through your eyes, but through the people that you're with. I think from the cultural exchange, especially, and also because I was so involved with FCC from the start, I had like more of a deeper understanding of the culture at that point in time, since I had more experience with it. And so it was really cool to talk to the fellow adoptees and learn about how they were viewing that and how their stories and their personal history changed the way that they saw, you know, what we were all seeing, but it's just that different outlook. So yeah, but it was wonderful, and I made some really good friends there and stuff like that.
How was meeting your foster mother?
That was really it was really hard, mostly because I didn't speak Mandarin at the time. I still don't. I'm learning currently. But I wasn't really able to ask her all of the things that I wanted to ask her, because there was that language barrier. And so we had to go through a translator, which is just kind of hard to get really the full message. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I wish I could have, like, said in that context in the moment. even some things that, like, I wish, like, I could have said, like, alone, like, without my mom there, because, you know, there's just some things that, like, I feel like it would be hard to say.
Like what?
Just, yeah. I think I've kind of always, like, in the back of my mind wanted to know, like, more about my history. I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't, but I feel like I would offend, like, my adopted mom if she thought that I didn't, you know, like, I wasn't getting everything out of, you know, like, my childhood that I possibly could. But that's not, you know, it's just not something I'm probably ever going to know, but it's just, you know, something that would be, like, nice to have.
Do you ever think about a birth parent search?
No. Mostly because when I think about, first of all, it would, you know, it's just really hard in general in the first place. And I also think that out of a courtesy to, like, my birth parents, it's not, I don't think it would be fair to, like, track them down and then demand all of these answers, because I personally have this, like, view in my mind that I think is the case with a lot of adoptees, that, you know, your birth parents are doing this in your best interest because they want you to, you know, have a good life. So I don't think it would be fair to just kind of ignore that and just keep wanting, like, more answers and more answers. And you know, that differs for obviously everyone, but just personally, I wouldn't ever, I think, go looking for them. If somehow, like, they reached out to me, like, I would be, I guess, cool with that and, like, talking with them and, like, because it's their choice. But the other way around, I don't think is, like, just something I would want to do.
So it sounds like you've thought a lot about everybody's feelings in this. Your mom's feelings in terms of pressing the foster mom or talking with the foster mom for more information, and your birth parents' feelings, and the notion that you don't know what they would think or feel if you came knocking on their door. Do you feel pretty resolved in your own mind about not knowing? Or, in other words, I guess what I'm wondering is, you're very considerate of everyone else, and where does that leave you with this information you would like to have?
Yeah, there's always going to be those questions that I think I would like to know the answer to, but, you know, that's just, I'm not going to get. And so I'm pretty comfortable with that, I think. And just having that, like, idea of them, you know, is, like, enough at this point, because it's just, I don't know, other people's feelings are very important to me, I think. And so, like, if I can be safe in the knowledge that, like, the people around me are okay, I think that's, like, okay for now. But, yeah.
How do you think your mom would react if you asked about a birth parent search?
I've mentioned it to her. We haven't really talked in depth about it, but I think she would be okay with that, just because she's also one of those people that she tries her, like, very hardest to make sure that I'm okay and that I'm happy. So, like, I don't, you know, the times that we have brought it up, like, she sounded really supportive, but just, she wants to make sure that, like, I'm okay with, you know, if I was going to go do that, she would want to make sure that, like, I was in a good place to do that. But other than that, I think she would be fine.
Do you have any siblings?
I don't. It's interesting because the girls that I were adopted with, like, we were really good friends for a long time, and we, like, considered each other sisters. And then, you know, after we got older, we just drifted apart, and so you don't really see those people anymore, which is upsetting. But there's kind of this, like, at least I like to think there's, like, this, like, connection still with us. And, like, whenever we see each other, it's really easy to just kind of, like, pick back up, like, where we left off. And so that's really nice. So in a way, in a sense. But, yeah, I'm an only child.
Did you have kind of reunions when you were younger with the girls you were adopted with?
Yeah, I did. And I was also part of a, like, an FCC playgroup. So I was able to talk with other, like, adoptees. And, like, so I was at least, like, around other people that had similar stories. And we had the opportunities to talk and, like, things like that.
So tell me about growing up, and I'm interested in friends and sort of questions and how you dealt with all of that. And then also in FCC, because you've been very active, it sounds like, from the time you were little, yeah, all the way through being a counselor. So tell me about kind of the role that FCC has played. And if you could run FCC, if we were, now that you're all coming of age and don't need parents to plan everything, if adoptees could run FCC, what would be the same and what would be different?
Well, first off, FCC, all of the FCC meetups and the groups and like whenever we had the Chinese cultural events, those were always, I always looked forward to those. And those were always where I felt the most comfortable, probably because I was like around a lot of people that were like me. And I think a lot of the, at least the people that I've talked to, like most of the people felt the same because you're in a situation where like you're now the majority, you know, in the community. And so it's just, it just feels a lot more comfortable. As far as like running it, I don't think I can handle that much paperwork, but, I think if you have adoptees, if you had adoptees running it and just in general, whenever you have adoptees like heading organizations and projects and things like that in general about adoption, you get kind of this more in-depth and more personal experience from it. I think that would help a lot with the adoptees that are coming in, you know, and there's not as many of them now. So I think it would be very interesting and very helpful as far as like educating the community if you have, you know, the personal stories and the things like that that are like kind of the voice of these organizations. And then as far as it is growing up, it was interesting because until like third grade when I started going to a new school, I was in like Montessori school for the first few years, and I never really experienced discrimination from like the kids around me. You don't really, I don't want to say you're colorblind because you're not, but you're like, you don't really think about those things until you get to a certain age when society basically like demands that you start, you know, paying attention to those things. And I don't want to like blame, like be like, oh, you know, but you know, it's just a thing that happens. So, I think up until third grade, like when I started going to like a quote real school, it was like not really a big deal. And I, you know, I had friends of, you know, all ethnicities and like, you know, backgrounds and things like that. And then when I got to third grade, when I started going to this new school, it was like there were a couple of African-American kids, no Hispanic kids, and then there was me, and then everyone else was Caucasian. I was really good friends with like one of the only other African-American kids in the class for just that first year before the person left. But it was like, we were like the only minority, so we like stuck together, kind of. And then later on, I just kind of like, when like there weren't ever any African-American kids in my class, almost none. And so like, it was just like me and like all of the Caucasian kids. Oh, I'm sorry. I just remembered there was one Hispanic kid, but he like left really quickly. So growing up, like most of my friends were Caucasian or white. Especially, I have some really, really close family friends that I've known for literally since I came from China. And so they kind of like, we consider like ourselves sisters just because we grew up together. But just the neighborhood they grew up in, so I hung out with them a lot when I was a kid. And the neighborhood they grew up in was predominantly white. And so I was just kind of surrounded by, I didn't really have anyone to like relate to in my daily life, which is why those FCC events were like such a big deal, because we all like lived, all of my FCC friends, like we all lived in different places, so we didn't ever have the chance to like come together and like hang out and stuff. And it wasn't until about like fifth-ish grade that like there was another Chinese adoptee at the school, but they were in a different grade than me, so like we didn't ever like interact. But I remember always getting confused to be that with like being that person's sister. And that was whenever there was like a group of like Chinese adoptees or just any Asian kids in a group, like everyone assumed we were related. And I went to a lot of summer camps as well when I was a kid, because my mom worked like through the summer. So I was like at camps that were, you know, mostly white kids. And then this sticks out in my mind because it was the first time I ever got upset for being, like, stereotyped and, like, categorized. Because, like, all of the other times I'd experienced a lot of stuff, but I just kind of rolled with it because it was easier for me to just go with it rather than, like, speak up about it. And I was, at the time, I didn't have any, like, I didn't know how to argue back with them, you know, because I was growing up with the same media and stuff that they were, like, so.
What did they say?
I had a lot of Chinese jokes told me. I had a lot of people speaking fake Chinese to me. I had a lot of people, everyone thought I did karate, which I did, but, you know, still racist. Just kind of the things that you think about, just a lot of stereotypes, and it was weird. When I was, I don't remember what grade it was. I think it was fourth. There were a bunch of guys that, like, just wanted to call me Mulan, and so they just called me Mulan for, like, 2 months or so until I, like, told my mom, and she was the one who went and, like, told the school that they needed to, like, stop and, like, tell those kids that it wasn't okay. But I just, like, rolled with it until that one time in summer camp, and they were, like, there was a girl from South Korea and there was a girl from Japan, and the three of us, like, hung out a lot, and then someone was saying something or other about, like, us being related or something, and I, like, it was the first time I'd ever gotten angry about that, and so I was like, we're not related, we don't look anything alike, like, leave us alone. And then, and of course they didn't, because we're, you know, what? I remember it because it was, like, the first time I'd ever, like, kind of stood up for that and, like, felt this kind of, like I wasn't trying to fit in. It was just the first time that I had ever kind of, like, not wanted to be like everyone else. And that was, you know, really important, obviously.
So that was sort of like the first moment that you really declared yourself. And do you remember roughly how old you were?
I guess like 9 or 10.
9 or 10.
And it was just, I'd never really, there was always a part of me that kind of like wanted to be like everyone else. And then at that point in time, I was just like, you know what? I mean, there's nothing wrong with like not being like these people, but it's like, I'm not. And, you know, I shouldn't have to, I this is going to sound cheesy and cliche or whatever, but it's like, it's true. I shouldn't have to change and adapt to a certain standard because I'm not, you know, I'm not that same standard. And, you know, I should just embrace that I'm different and go with that and build on that. And so, and then after that, I had like a really long conversation with my mom about it, and she talked to me, and it was just like, it was just really nice because I got, also then I got like, in this conversation, I got like this assurance that, you know, my mom was going to obviously like care about me no matter what I think when you're little, like you want to make your parents happy and that kind of thing. And so there was a lot of like bullying and like racism and stuff that I had tolerated just because I didn't want to like be like a burden on anyone. And it was like at that time, like I kind of got this like reassurance that I could talk about stuff and like I wouldn't like get in trouble for it.
You kind of sucked it up until then.
Yeah.
And do you think that's common among adoptees from talking to friends? And do you have a sense of whether that's a common experience or not?
From the people I've talked to, it's interesting because I don't have a lot of conversations with my adopted friends about being adopted, at least the ones that are like my same age. When I'm a counselor at FCC, we have these conversations with the campers about being adopted. And I've had more in-depth conversations with the kids that I'm a counselor for than I have with the people my own age, because I think there's like this weird stigma against like talking about it once you're older, because you're expected to like, oh, you've gotten over it already, like, you know. And so I don't think it's discussed nearly enough with people your own age. I forgot the question. I'm sorry.
I was just wondering if it's, do you think it's common for young adoptees to kind of suck it up, to sort of not maybe they're experiencing much more in the way of these unwelcome remarks than their parents are aware of.
Yeah, I definitely do. And I think that's the case with any adoptee whatsoever. But especially the ones that are like foreign adoptees or from that are a different race than their parents, basically. Because you, first of all, there's a point that you get to when you're really young, like you don't really know why you're being discriminated against, you know, because it's like it just never occurs to you, like it just occurs to like kids in general that like there's a difference, I think, between like races. And so it's not until you get to the point where you like start noticing the cultural, you know, the culture around races and like the stereotypes and stuff that, and that's the point when stuff really gets bad. And I think a lot of kids try to like kind of push that away and like put that off, having that conversation off, because it's hard, because you don't know how your parents are going to react. You don't know how you're going to react. You know, you don't know how your community is going to react. If you've, you know, especially if you're a Chinese adoptee, if you live in a community where the majority of people are not like you, you don't know how, you know, how well they're going to understand you or if they're going to understand you at all. And so you have this kind of like fear that you won't be understood. So you just kind of like bottle it up. And, you know, spend a long time, like, trying to find the right words for it, and then, but you just don't have that yet, I think. And obviously, I don't want to make generalizations about everyone, but that's a shared experience, I think, that my friends that I've talked to, that I have talked to about this, especially with the campers that I've talked to, like, have this, and they've told me all these things that have happened to them, and that they haven't told their parents, or they tell me not to tell their parents. Which I think is really interesting, because it just requires that kind of, like, what I got, like, that assurance that it's, like, it's okay to talk about things and to be open about things. And I think that also what comes with that is the understanding, like, that you're different from these people, but that doesn't mean that you're any less than them or that your feelings don't matter in the grand scheme of things. So, yeah.
So when you, after you talk to your mom... And she told you, look, I'm with you, and don't shoulder this alone. She went in and intervened when those kids kept calling you Mulan. Yeah. That's really annoying.
When I think about it, it's like classic. Like, I've never heard that before. Like, you know.
Right. You wish they would at least be original.
Yeah. Like, you know, tell me something I haven't heard before.
Once that happened and you kind of declared yourself at 9 and basically said, cut it out, I'm not Japanese, I'm not Korean, we're not the same person, did that help you advocate for yourself as you went on, or would you say it was a kind of back and forth all the way through?
It helped me talk to my mom about it more, but I didn't really start standing up for myself until I got a lot older, which is really, like, upsetting to think about. But like when you're in middle school, you like you read all those books and you watch all those movies about like bullying, because middle school in general is just horrible for everyone. Like, it sucks because it's like it's just this very superficial, just, oh god, I hate middle school so much. Okay, so I, you know, you kind of have to, like, in middle school you're taught to like be yourself. Like, what the heck does that mean? You know, if you act like yourself, you're not going to have any friends. Like, I hate to say that, but it's like, from looking at middle schoolers that I know now, like, you know, the siblings of my friends or, you know, the campers that I work with, or, you know, just looking back at my own experiences, there's just like this expectation that you need to like conform to this certain idea. And then on top of that, like, you're going through puberty and all this stuff. And so, like, not only did I have to like do that, I also had to, like, learn how to stand up for myself because of my race. It wasn't just, like, just appearance and, like, grades and, you know, what kind of shirt you were wearing that day. You know, there was a girl in my grade that, like, wouldn't talk to you if you didn't wear, like, an Aeropostale shirt or something like that, you know. And so I had to get an Aeropostale shirt. And then I had to, like, stand up for myself. So it was just, like, it took me until probably, probably, like, freshman year of high school before I really started, like, thinking about calling people out on racism towards me and then calling them out on racism towards other people and really starting to become educated about the social issues and about adoption. Part of it was, I think, the FCC culture camp, because, like, I'm supposed to be teaching all these kids to stand up for themselves and to be in touch with their culture and stuff like that, and I was like, I'm not even there myself. And so it was just, it was kind of an eye-opener for me, like, when I was a counselor, and I was like, all these kids are coming to me with their problems, and I can't fix it. But I was like, I recognize these problems, like, what did I do to fix those for myself? And I, like, didn't really do much, and so I, like, wanted them to not be in that same position.
It's a pretty big responsibility to be a teenager figuring things out for yourself among your peers. And then being a camper, being a counselor at a camp where you're a role model, you're working with younger kids who are confiding in you, and you're trying to sort out the very same problems they're confiding in you about. So what would you tell them?
I think my first thing is, and this is, like, so broad, but it is to educate yourself. Like, know about where you're from. Know how to say your Chinese name. I didn't know how to do that until, like, fifth grade, I think. Also know how to write it. That would be great. Be as in touch with yourself as possible. You know, education on, like, a personal level. Learn about where you're from. Learn about, you know. And then be educated about, you know, the society that you're living in. Like, recognize that there are people out there that, this sounds really pessimistic, but, like, know that there are people that are not going to like you because of your race. And then just think about that in the grand scheme of things. And I think knowing that will, like, cause a lot less strife, because you don't try to, like, conform to other people's views of what you should be as an Asian, as a, you know, as your age, as your, you know, gender, things like that. Just know that there are going to be people who don't like you, and they don't matter in your life. I hate the advice, be yourself, because, like, it is impossible to, like, to be someone that you are not. I've tried it, and it doesn't work, you know. So all that ends up doing is making your life miserable, and you, like, because you're so worried about what other people think of you, and you're not really thinking about what you want to be. And so I think that the key there is, with a lot of things, is education, but being in touch with who you are and yourself, knowing about your background, knowing about what you want, and then knowing that there are just going to be people out there that are not nice people, and that you shouldn't worry about them, because they're not important in your life. You don't have to interact with those people. You don't have to listen to those people, you know, and then surround yourself with people that are cool, that like you for who you are and aren't trying to change you, and that are supportive with supportive of who you are.
So if you essentially say to yourself some version of, hey, you know what? Not everyone on this planet is going to get me. Yeah. Not everyone on this planet is going to like me. There are people in this world who make judgments based on what ethnicity people are, what race, what country they come from, and I'm just not even going to get myself involved in thinking about how to tailor myself to those people.
Am I allowed to curse on this thing?
Yeah, are you kidding? Go for it, girl. I'm a major curser. Curse your head off. Don't worry about it. This is your story.
It's so bad. I curse like a sailor. It's terrible. This brings up a point that I was thinking of. There's a lot of racism within the Asian community. I guess the right word is, I guess it's not racism, but there's a lot of discrimination within the Asian community towards adoptees. that I have felt particularly, because I have a lot of friends who are Chinese, especially from Chinese dance, that have Chinese parents. I mean, and they were all nice people, but there's this like idea that you're not actually Chinese. And that's obviously, you know, especially hard for adoptees, because like you're like, I'm not this culture. Where am I supposed to be? And so it kind of took, it kind of takes like double the work to get to that point, like within the Chinese community. I mean, I don't know about any of the other, obviously any of the other races, because I'm not, you know, part of that, but the Chinese especially, because there's just this idea of like, well, there are traditions, you know, and it's like, if you don't like fit into those, if you don't understand those, you're not like actually Chinese, you know?
So it's not just, you know, feeling this from white people or from people who are not Asian, but from Chinese people who may not see you as authentically Chinese. And can you remember examples of, or an example maybe of how you became aware of that, when you felt that?
I think the biggest thing was when I was in Chinatown, and there was some like, for the first time, I was at like a Chinese market. I was there with a group of girls that I went to dance with, and they were all Chinese as well, but they weren't adopted. And they like said something and like asked me what I thought of it, and I didn't know what it was. And so they just like stopped talking to me. Like they just like cut me out of the conversation. And so I just kind of sat there for the rest of like the hour and a half, like listening to these kids talk. And like, I had no idea what they were talking about. And I wasn't like, they didn't make any effort to like tell me about it so that I could, you know, educate myself or whatever. It was just like, if I didn't know about this automatically, like I wasn't worth including in the conversation. And that was kind of the first thing that happened.
Was that here in Austin?
Yeah, that was, I was younger though, because it was before I danced at two places. I danced at Love of China, and then I danced at April Rain. And this was when I was still with Love of China, which was when I was really little. So it was a while ago, but yeah.
Did you like Chinese dance? Did you like doing it?
I liked doing it with April Rain. Love of China was, it was a great program, and their director is really nice, but it just wasn't the right community and the right structure for me. I really liked it. It got better as I got older. It was kind of hard just because I wasn't the best dancer, but I had fun with it. Like, it was one of those things that's like, it was kind of like a hobby for me. Like, I mean, I knew I wasn't gonna like go be a dancer, but it was just fun. And it got a lot better as I got older, because you kind of like the people around you like kind of like mature more in that sense, and like they realize that it's like you're not necessarily in there, because I got kind of picked on when I was a kid because I wasn't the best person. But then like when everyone got older, they realized that it's like, it's not about whether or not you're good or not, it's just about having fun. And that's when it like, when I really started liking it, because we had this community of like, we had I think there was five of us in this like, in like the top kind of group, and like we became really good friends because it was just like, it was just something that was fun. And like, it was also nice to like finally be like in the top class. And so you got to like work with the little kid, you know, quote little kids, and like you got to kind of be the leaders. And so it was fun. And then that was also when I realized that I had like other talents that I could like contribute to it. I didn't have to be the best dancer, but I could help out with, you know, the choreography, and like I sang in one of the performances and stuff. And it was just like, you got like the things that you were really good at and were able to kind of integrate them. And so it became more of a community that had this like basis of Chinese dance and Chinese culture. And then you were doing it with people that like one of the girls was an adoptee, and then the rest of them had Chinese parents. But like, they just like, they didn't care. Like, we were just like part of this like nice little community, and it was really nice. And I think it helped a lot to it helped me stay in touch with the culture when I wasn't, because it was every week, and so it was like something I could do every week rather than, you know, wait several months and then go to an FCC thing. So it helped me like keep in touch with the culture throughout my entire life, and it kind of strengthened that, like, I think, sense of nationality.
And then on the point about Chinese people kind of not seeing you as legitimately Chinese, did you feel any of that when you were in China, or was it fairly insulated because you were on a heritage tour?
What was actually funny is when I was in Shishimbana, I actually felt less of that. Like, the schools were very welcoming, and we were guests of the government as well, and so we went to a lot of, like, talks and interviews with them, and I never felt like I was being, like, stigmatized, really. I felt more of it when I was on the heritage tour from some of the people on there. See, part of it, I think, was maybe my fault because I was, like, because I knew a lot about the culture from having been there for a week before, you know, and in that kind of immersive cultural experience, I wouldn't correct people, but, like, if they asked questions or something, and, like, if the tour guide didn't know the answer, or, like, the tour guide didn't answer them, I would, like, answer them. And so I think there was just this kind of, like, you're a kid, you shouldn't be, like, speaking up about this, even though it was something that, like, I knew a lot about. And that's been kind of a problem, like, my whole life, because I'm weirdly knowledgeable about weird things. So, like, if, like, I just know these, like, random facts from, like, things that I, like, because I research things that I find interesting just for fun. And I want to, like, tell people about them, and I want people to, like, learn about those things. But I don't always realize that, like, especially when I was little, I didn't always realize that, like, people didn't always want my help.
So, like, the tour guides were like, kid, we don't need you to answer the questions, or it was the other people on the tour?
Yeah, it wasn't the tour guide. It was the parents of the people. And this wasn't necessarily even in, like, a tour guide or in, like, a tour setting. It would just be, like, we were sitting at dinner, and they would be, now I can't think of an example, or they'd be like, oh, why don't, you know, well, they'd ask, like, a question or something, just, like, kind of, like, thinking out loud kind of thing to, like, the entire group, and then I would actually have an answer for it, and they'd be like, that was rhetorical, don't answer me, you know. And so I got kind of, like, I think more alienated in that setting than I did when I was, like, talking to the other Chinese students. But when I was in a setting with parents of adoptees, and none of the adoptees had a problem with it. They were all, like, really happy to, like, learn stuff. But it was, like, the parents, I think. And I think part of it is that I was talking about this with you earlier, but that you, when you're a parent of an adoptee, you kind of have this, you start believing that you have an understanding of the culture and of what your child has been through. And I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, you're never going to understand what your kid is going through. And it's not fair to them to, like, limit them and what they do just because you think that you understand it and that you think that you know about enough about this to, like, make their decision for them.
You're 18 years old. You've been here since you were 18 months. Your generation is coming of age, right? So what about, lay it on me, be honest, what about the adoptive parents? You were telling me earlier that you don't think adoptive parents should tell their child's story. Tell me about that.
Okay. I think that there's, just in general in our society, there's this idea that teenagers don't have an opinion. And, like, and I'm not going to lie, there are some teenagers that I think should not be saying things. There are things that I have said that I look back and I'm like, that was stupid. I shouldn't have said that. That was judgmental. I wasn't really thinking logically about it. So I get that. But I don't think we give, like, teens and young adults enough credit, because they're just saying, oh, they're just being loud. They have an agenda. They have these new ideas, these liberal, you know, those young people. And I don't think that's fair. And especially with adoptees, because and Chinese adoptees, you get this, like, idea that, oh, you're not old enough to understand what's going on, which is, I mean, obviously, like, that's blanket, but that's the base of it. I think I've been talking to an adoptee that's been telling me about something, like, you know, the just some kind of, like, discrimination or bullying that's happened to them, and their parent has interrupted them and been like, oh, that wasn't what would happen, that, you know, blah 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 blah. And so I don't think that parents should silence their kids and try to tell stories for them, because you're not in the position to do that. And And like I said, there's, you know, parents, I think, of adoptees have this, like, false sense of understanding of what it's like to be adopted. And I'm not saying that you don't, you definitely understand more than, you know, someone who's just talking about it, you know, without any experience does. But you don't have that understanding of what it's like to be adopted and the position that you're put in, and the position that you're put in being Chinese in a society that is majority, you know, that's Anglo and, like, white-centric. So I don't think it's fair to say that you have an understanding of what it's like to be adopted when you're not actually adopted. And it's worse in some ways because the people listening to you think, oh, because that person has an adopted child, they definitely know what they're talking about. Like, they must know what they're saying must be right. And that's not always true.
What is the role for parents? Tell me what the role for parents should be as their kids get older. Obviously, it changes over time.
I think first and foremost, it's to be supportive and to be a support for them, you know, and let your kid, like, vent to you. Like, let them talk about their problems. Don't interrupt them and try to, like, reason it or, like, justify it or apologize to them, because they're not, you know, like, you're not asking for your parents' apology. You're just wanting them to listen to you and maybe, you know, just a little bit understand what you're going through so that you can help them. And so I, you know, I've had conversations with my mom, and I know she means, like, the best, you know, and I would never think that she doesn't, you know, she doesn't have my best interests at heart. But I've told her about things that have happened to me, and she goes, oh, like, don't worry about it. They're just, you know, they're just little. Or, oh, don't worry about that. They're, you know, they just don't know, you know, whatever. And, or, you know, they just don't do this, or they, you know, and, like, that's not what you're necessarily looking for. You're not looking for justification from an entire society. You just want to know that your parents will have your back and that they're going to support you no matter what happens. And so I think that that's the most important thing, is to listen, like, listen to your kid and just put aside all of the things that you have, the beliefs that you have, the, you know, and just, like, let them talk to you. And like I said, don't try to make excuses. Don't try to, you know, reason things out. Just allow them, because you're not going to know what they're going through ever, but you can at least try. You can make people feel, like, better for, like, the time being by just saying, like, oh, like, they didn't know what they were talking about. But that doesn't change the fact that, like, that still happens, and that those comments still come, and the racism is still there. And so what's much more important than saying, oh, that individual doesn't know what they're talking about, that person just isn't educated as much, is to come to terms with the fact that your child is not going to be, like, treated the same as other kids. And then, like, from that standpoint, like, just listen to them.
Yeah. So rather than trying to make it go away by making it seem like an exception, this person is ignorant, don't pay any attention to what they have to say, maybe what the parent should say is, I hear you. Mm-hmm. And that must have felt terrible. Mm-hmm. And I think from the adoptive parent standpoint, I mean, speaking for myself, it's very hard to say to your kid, we live in a racist society, and you are going to be at the brunt of it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I will help you, if you want me to, figure out some strategies when it happens. Mm-hmm. When I hear you say this, I know that that is the thing, exactly the right thing to say. And I also know it's very hard to come to terms, even though you know it intellectually, with saying to your child, you know, you're right, this sucks.
Especially for the girls. And I don't know if this is getting too off topic or whatever, but there's this huge stereotype against Asian women in general, and this, like, objectification. And when I was in high school, senior year, there were, like, these guys, these, like, two you know, what, like 17-year-old kids in the hallway talking about how they love Asian women. And then they, like, I was, like, passing, and one of them noticed me, and he, like, looked at me, and he was like, oh, but, like, don't worry, like, not your kind of Asian. And I was like, oh.
What is that?
Like, this is messed up on so many levels. Like, first of all, you're 17. Like, go to class. Second of all, it just blew my mind that was something being talked about, like, in a middle school or in a high school. And, like, realistically, like, that stuff is everywhere. Like, from, you know, the second you turn on the TV, you know, and it sucks. But it's just, like, it's harder for the girls, like, the girls adopted from China that are part of that generation, that have to, like, we have to kind of, like, grow up in that sexism and the racism there. But, like, we don't even identify as, like, this. Or, I mean, none of the Asian women do. But, like, there's this, like, idealized, like, objectified, like, view in our society of, like, Asian women and, like, that stereotype. And, like, no one really conforms to that, you know, if you think about it. This, like, person who, like, this, like, idea that doesn't have a personality, that's just kind of like there. And I think that stereotype really affects young Asian women and girls, because I mean I don't want to say like you, like in general, but I know I have felt like sometimes that, like, if I could be like that stereotype, that, like, people would, like, I don't know, like me or, like, pay attention to me more. Not in, like, the objectified way, but, like, if you look at, like, the women, like the Asian women in media, you kind of have, like, these two tropes, and they're, like, the, like, love interest that doesn't have a personality, or it's, like, the sidekick who's, like, goofy and dumb and, like, doesn't really, you know. And so how, like, if I'm going to be noticed in, like, in a society that has these, like, two ideas of Asians in general, and especially when you're a female, it's, like, do, like, what am I going to do to have to, like, make people notice me as a person rather than, like, as this idea? And I don't really know how to, like, talk about that as much in, like, a family-friendly way.
You're talking about the kind of sexualized, subservient Asian woman stereotype.
And I have, first of all, it's disgusting. But second of all, I've had, like, people that I thought were, like, friends, like, guys especially, that I thought were friends, and then turns out that they're, like, only interested because they think I can be, like, this, like, stereotype, this, like, weird idea, like, twisted idea of, like, what they think Asian women should be. And I've talked to my fellow adoptees that are my age about, because, like, when you get, like, these guys that have, like, this, like, yellow fever and this idea of Chinese women, it's really hard to, like, find your place in society as a, like, strong, you know, strong Asian woman, when you've got, like, all of these stereotypes and, like, judgments, like, kind of weighing down on you from everywhere, you know. What it all boils down to is, like, that I think it's, like, harder, especially for, like, the girls that are adopted. And so you kind of have to, you've got to, like, fight these, like, you've got to fight the stereotype, first of all, that you're, like, adopted and that you're Asian, you know. And then you've got to get past the, just this kind of, like, cultural stereotype of, you know, what you're supposed to be